Om Myoho Renge Kyo. Thank you for being here. Nice to see you. Such as it is, as a lens. I want to take just a moment. We're about to finish Letter to Horen. There's not much more left in it, but Nietzsche makes a pretty strong point as he closes this letter. And I just want to talk around that point for a moment. Move that microphone in place. Sorry about that. I just want to talk for a moment about the tremendous fortune in our lives, you and me. In having had whatever it was in our energy, our karmic makeup, our instantiation as humans, whatever our life experience has been, that developed the curiosity, developed the question, and further that question leading ultimately to these teachings. And now our ability and our great good fortune not only to have encountered these teachings, but now to ask questions, learn, and do study and dig into the nature of these teachings. To say nothing of the fact that the goal is to awaken our Buddha nature, our Buddha-ness. We really, I don't know about you, but I think most people enter into this practice, if they're not born into it, enter into this practice not really having a good idea what it is they're trying to achieve, what we're trying to develop or attain or have, because, you know, samsara, everything's about having, right? But somehow we developed the will, the volition, to pursue this path of inquiry, of discovery, right? We have to take a moment to acknowledge how wonderful, how amazingly precious our own nature is to have come to this. Now, why do I say this? So Nietzsche points out a very, very important distinction in the last couple of paragraphs of this letter. There are these admonitions or ideas in the Lotus Sutra of people who contradict these teachings or the goal of these teachings. And what will happen to them, right? Their mental state, like the mind or the their head splitting into seven pieces. We've heard that now a couple of times in this letter. It's not that like a sci-fi movie, their heads are just going to split into seven pieces, right? But that, if you think about it, that's quite a description of the state of mind of people who, well, they end up in institutions. We call it schizophrenia, right? Or various versions of schizophrenia. Everything from manic depressive to just depression itself. All of these mental states. That's what Buddhism is describing. And I certainly don't envy or even want to entertain the idea of my mind breaking apart like those people who hopefully are in institutions. I say hopefully because so many end up on the streets now, and they're a good measure of our homeless population. Not all, but, you know, they're out there. It's a very pitiful state of affairs, Namo Myoho Renge Kyo. But this is what Buddhism is talking about, right? So Nietzsche makes a distinction between people who are completely ignorant of the Buddhist teachings, never developed the volition or the ichinin or the discovery of these teachings. and who nonetheless behave in a dismissive or even an attacking way at anyone who would try to approach them with Myoho Rengekyo or the Buddhist teachings in general. This is why sometimes it's said that planting the seed can be as simple as getting somebody to repeat the Daimoku three times, do Daimoku Sansho with them. They may look at you like you're, you know, some kind of touched individual, right? But, you know, if they're willing to repeat Namu Myoho Renge Kyo three times with you, and you thank them and look forward to their attainment of Buddhahood, and offer them any kind of assistance should they desire it, and give them a way to contact you or a website, so on and so forth, then you've planted a very important seed. And for many of us, that's the way we start, because it's very hard to build your confidence as a bodhisattva. How do I assist others? And oftentimes, oddly enough, it starts with strangers. Because your own family sometimes will resist you more than anyone else if you start to try to talk about the, oh, that Buddhism thing that they do, right? Not always, but it can happen that way. Suffice it to say that I'm pointing out that some people, believe it or not, barely know the word Buddhism, let alone Buddha, and they all have a weird conception of what that is, but they have no desire or idea of what it would be to study that, other than they might envision some far-off monastery with a bunch of cloistered people in it, because people don't know. That's ignorance. That's the nature of ignorance, right? So, but those people don't necessarily make bad causes against Buddhism. They may get in their own way for their awakening, though, because we all have met people who's, even including ourselves, who in ignorance make causes every day that do not speak to our highest potential. In fact, we get in our own way of our own enlightenment, right? That's why this tool is so precious. But for those who have no idea, they make these negative causes, and they just keep making these negative causes. Their retribution is their life condition. Retribution. Western word. The result of the way they behave in their lives. Result is the word. Because there is the way you behave, your causal nature, because everything we do is a cause towards something. And the result, the resolve of that cause is the effect, right? Cause and effect. We hear it all the time. But it's important to anthropomorphize this idea. It's not just a chalkboard experiment. When we say words, think thoughts, make actions, we're moving our, see, life is a momentum, right? It's kinetic. So whatever we do affects the next moment. That's how cause works. And the next moment will be a reflection or an effect of that direction, that action, that energy we're putting forward, right? So if we don't know that there's a way to change that, we just continue to do it, and we delude our minds into thinking that we're on the right track or not on the right track or whatever. But we kind of aimlessly go through life that way. And with the tool of Myoho Rengekyo, we can start to alter, even unknowingly, without understanding the nature of the puzzle, we start to influence, and this is why I use that word a lot, we start to influence the way that we put forth our momentum, our kinetic energy. And so it starts to affect the nature of the effect, the nature of how that will play out in our lives. And therefore, our life condition is elevated or lowered depending on that. And that is karma. that karma is the nature of the kinetic energy that we create, summed, the sum total of which includes what we've done prior to this moment, because that's our inertia, right? And now we're just influencing, go this way, go that way, go this way, go that way, right? That's the whole game of Buddhism. And I don't say game in order to minimize it, just as a term of speech. So then there's another type of person, a person that does know about Buddhism, does know about Myoho Renge Kyo specifically. Somebody who's maybe even studied, but certainly somehow has learned about how this works, Myoho Renge Kyo. Now, the first kind of person, if they meet a votary of the Lotus Sutra, if they meet you, if you say, hi, can I, how are you, blah, 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 you get a conversation going, and you ever heard of Buddhism, and then maybe you have to correct their views on it. Have you ever heard of Namo Myoho Renge Kyo? And they look at you and they go, you're insane, you're nuts, get away from me, that thing, I don't want to know it, blah, 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 blah. They're making a bad cause, but they don't know the nature of the cause they're making because they're ignorant, right? This is the first kind of person. They've never understood any of this. And so then you have to reflect on how do I deal with that? Obviously, you have to chant about it. Whatever in your life is creating that dissonance, that has to change. And you can change it, even if they don't endeavor to do so. But you made an effort, and that alone is a good cause. But the result wasn't, to our mind anyway, satisfactory. You don't want to become an impediment for the future of this, right? So you have to be careful to back out of that situation without animosity, you know, and be pliant and compassionate, and then take that to Gohanzen so that that in your life can change, so that you don't become the spark for somebody's downward spiral, right? But to that person, they're just behaving the way that they behave. With ignorance, they don't understand what they're pushing away. So this is why we have to chant about it, because that continues our effort to help them along their path to eventually see the benefit in doing this, right? To study it the same way we had to come to it. I'm not saying the same exact way. I'm saying to appreciate that this great fortune that we have, that we felt self-motivated to, or maybe you didn't, maybe somebody had to convince you. But remember, those struggles are struggles, whichever way you come to Buddhism. But if somebody says, oh, I practice that, I and they recite part of the Gosho for you or part of the Gongyo for you, and yeah, but then I quit, you know, I don't do that anymore, and then disparages you and tells people to stay away from you and so forth. Well, the nature of that cause is way different than the first person who's ignorant of what they're doing. Do you follow? The person who's knowledgeable about this and then refutes you, they are refuting their own Buddha-ness, their own Buddha nature, which they well know is the goal and the practice of Myoho Renge Kyo. That person's head splits into seven direct pieces. Whereas the person who's ignorant, they're already in the hell of incessant suffering. They're already miserable. And the thing is, they don't know it. They just accept that misery as the way life is. And they negotiate their different levels of misery the way they are, to the point where they think they feel joy just when things seem to go their way in a mundane world. They don't get it. Eventually, they will, But that will take the assimilation of a lot of Buddhist life condition around them to influence them to the point where they then can get to a self-curious, motivated practice, study, right? They're just in that ignorant pool. So yeah, they may make things worse for them, but that's the nature of their lives. We want to help those people, but we can't do it against their will. So all we can do is offer and be careful not to create a negativity to compound their ignorance. So that's where we have to be careful. But if I were to tomorrow start railing against everything that I've been telling you now for years, I would be guilty of a great, great self-harm, right? A harm that the ignorant person doesn't even understand or know about. So this is why my mind would get split to know as much as I do, and then for some odd reason, turn against it would be to knowingly commit a grave error and further to, I can't even imagine how I could do that. But do you see my point? So this is what Nietzsche is going to point out here in the next couple of paragraphs. Again, in the Q&A setting, because he knows this is going to come up for Horen, as he's helping others, he's going to confront people of the first type who just don't know anything about Buddhism, and who may or may not be willing to take on the curiosity and the ichinin to find out more, or others who maybe have been practicing for a while that he may even have been teaching and developing his Buddha nature with them in the Sangha, right? Practicing together. And something may happen in their lives and they suddenly take him to task. The nature of their offense against their own Buddha nature far more grave than the person who doesn't know anything about it. And so, in a clever way, although this comes up, Nichiren brings this up for Horen, he then answers it by telling him to do more study. The answers are there. They're in the Lotus Sutra, they're in the Nirvana, they're in the opening of the eyes, they're in the text. Study, you will see. So that's an interesting resolve. And now I'll go ahead and read those last couple of paragraphs, and you can see how Nichiren goes about this. So, question. Your argument is that though you are a votary of the Lotus Sutra, your advice is not heeded, and therefore these heavenly calamities and strange occurrences on earth arise. But the eighth volume of the Lotus Sutra states, their heads will split into seven pieces, end quote. And the fifth volume states, if people speak ill of and revile him, their mouths will be closed and stopped up, end quote. It sounds like many a sci-fi we've watched in the movies, right? Why is it, though, that you have been cursed and treated with animosity for many years now? These latter things have not occurred. Right? Seed of doubt. Answer. By way of answer, let me ask in turn, if the people who cursed and reviled and beat Bodhisattva never disparaging had their mouths stopped up or their heads split apart. Right? Do you remember this? This is in the Lotus Sutra. Question. They did not. But in that case, the text of the sutra is not consistent with itself, is it? Answer. There are two types of people who show animosity toward the Lotus Sutra. The first are people who cultivated the roots of goodness in former existences, in the past, who in their present existence are searching for some connection with Buddhism, who conceive a desire for enlightenment and are capable of attaining Buddhahood. It is these people whose mouths are stopped up or whose heads split apart. Isn't that what I just explained, right? People like us who have developed these roots of self-improvement, of wanting to understand how to better ourselves and life in general, we kind of naturally gravitate toward the teachings of Buddhism. Take another moment to just appreciate how precious that is. Namo Myoho-renge-kyo. That is in our nature. How amazing. Right? Now he goes on, the other type are people who have slandered the correct teaching in their previous existences, slander it in their present existence, and for existence after existence, go on creating karma that will condemn them to the hell of incessant suffering. Now, I've already explained what that means. That sounds like he's not saying previous lifetimes so much as previous existences, but that was 5 minutes ago. That was last week. That was a decade ago. Pick any moment on a clock that precedes this moment, and that, my friend, is a previous existence. So he's simply saying that people who've slandered, now what does it mean to slander the correct teaching? That can mean anything from, I studied Buddhism when I was in high school under the rubrics of art history, but I was never interested in looking into it. Well, that's a slander. Yeah, it's a slander, but the nature of the slander is from a person who has no idea what they're slandering. But it's slander in Buddhist teaching or doctrine simply because the opportunity to be a human being is to enlighten, is to awaken to the incredible, magnificent opportunity to understand all of this experience. To be in this experience and not understand this experience is a very lamentable thing, just plummeting through life. Right? It's the complete waste of a very phenomenally precise and precious thing. Even if all you can expand your mind to is this universe alone, how precious is this little infinitesimal little piece of dust within the whole that we are, with our cognition, with our perception of it? Doesn't it make sense that our deep appreciation and manifestation of our understanding of this entire process would be implied simply by just being here? That's the position of Buddhism. So that's where this rhetoric comes from. If you're not even motivated to find out, without knowing it, you're slandering it, because what you're slandering is your own potential, your own precious opportunity. Right? So then he goes on. These people, even though they may curse, will not have their mouth stopped. They are like men who have already been sentenced to execution and are waiting their turn in prison. While they are in prison, regardless of what evil acts they may commit, they will receive no further punishment other than the death sentence already passed upon them. That's a pretty insightful and kind of scary condemnation of the nature of life, right? Shakyamuni said, life is suffering. So that's your condemnation. You're in for life. You're on death row. Because everything you do is just kind of plummeting through what life you have until, boom, you're dead. Congratulations, you've achieved absolutely nothing. But with Buddhism, with Myoho Renge Kyo, you can head toward that door, that side of death, while making a tremendous impact on the energy of the whole process that you are part of by recognizing it, by being at one with it, by being a light amongst the others, appreciating it, so that when death comes, it's not a terrifying negative thing. It's simply the completion of having awakened and left the universe in a better condition than you entered it. Because our karma, it's energy, right? As I keep saying. And that momentum, that kinetic energy, when it leaves this body, this earthly body, it is energy that then is influenced to the energy of the whole. And so what we want to do is ameliorate that energy so that as that energy mixes with the whole, if it once again recombines into a nidana toward the manifestation of another human being or whatever, that karmic instantiation is a beautiful thing, has a head start already in understanding the precious nature of this entire circular process. Not reincarnation, not another lifetime, but that energy now completely dispersed into the whole is now affects. It's like pouring a cup of honey into the ocean. You don't change the ocean. And nowhere down on another continent will you go to a beach and put a cup in the water and pull out that cup of honey, right? That's a ridiculous thought, isn't it? But in some small infinitesimal way, you have changed the composition of the ocean. That's what I'm talking about. Leaving this life, this earthly life, with that kind of effect on the whole of the process is a beautiful, beautiful thing. But more beautiful and more to the point of Buddhism is living this life in this mundane world with that mindset, with that beauty, that preciousness in mind. How that affects every single moment we live, and therefore affects and influences all of the others around us. That's the point of Buddhism. The honey in the ocean is a sweet thought and it's wonderful, but that is a motivation. The actual practice of Buddhism is realization in this form. And I've said it before, and I'll say it again, Buddhahood is something we can only experience in this human form, in this life. Once we're done with this body, Buddhism has no relevance, none whatsoever. Right? So, Nichiren goes on. However, with regard to people who are eventually to be released, if they commit evil acts in prison, then they will receive warnings. So that's interesting. Even though they be ignorant. If they don't have a death sentence within prison and they're to be released, then their behavior will affect their life outside of prison, but they will undoubtedly receive warnings. So their life has enough fortune in it, evidently, to urge them to take a different path. Whether that leads to Buddhism or not depends on their karma, right? And ours. Because that's our karma as well. We share that as human beings. So this is the bodhisattva way, How do we alter that karma? How do we influence that karma away from its self-destruction? So this is very important, this letter to Horen. It's rife with meaning. And so what happens next is the question is, since this is a very important point, may I ask you to explain it in detail? What do you think Nichiren says? Answer: it is explained in the Nirvana Sutra and the Lotus Sutra. So start restudying what you think you already know. Go and study these sutras and see if those questions you're asking for more detail aren't already covered in those teachings. Just approach those teachings with a different mindset and you will see the answers are there. Myoho Renge Kyo. So that is how Nichiren ends his letter to Horen. It's a very strong teaching, a very important teaching. It's also a teaching that doesn't give him all the answers, but tells him where to look, tells him to reassert his dedication to study, because all of the answers are to be found there. There's another piece of wisdom in here to think about, is that Nichiren knows that talking to a fellow Buddhist, a Buddhist who is studying the Lotus Sutra, that you can't give everybody the answers they need. That's an important part of this teaching. You cannot answer every doubt and every question that a person asks you. And there's so many reasons for that. First of all, because people ask questions in their own motivations, right? It's the same thing that we talk about, I talk about all the time, is that perception is different for every one of us. And although we may hear what we think is the same question from 10 different people, they each have 10 different reasons to ask, 10 different ways in which they even understand the question they're asking. And even those who ask questions just to hear themselves ask a question while they're considering something completely other. So you can never hope to answer everyone's question. What you can do is encourage them and send them to the places where they can find the answers. Why? Because it's not that the answer is written there on page 249 of chapter so-and-so and blah, blah, blah. It's because the answers in Buddhism come from ourselves. They come from insight. They come from the application of trying to understand the meaning of the teachings and the way they reflect in our own personal lives, our own perceptions. And those aha moments happen individually to individual people who have specific and unique experiences of their life alone. This is why the path to enlightenment, the path to the Buddha way or the Bodhisattva way, is through your own insights into the nature of life from your own point of view. This is a critical point to understand, because you can exhaust a lot of energy trying to tell somebody how things are. But unless they're motivated to figure out how their things are, they'll never progress, nor will you. Things are as they are, but our perception, my perception of how things are as they are, is important to me because of my perception. I share my perception as abstractly as I can, because I know that through my words, you will hear something or you'll be directed to something that will enliven your own experience, and you will attain your own answer to the very same problems, situations, questions, doubts, whatever. And that will give you more confidence in your practice to enlighten your own Buddha-ness. this is how Buddhism works. So this is why it's a one-to-one practice, right? And ultimately, a self-motivated practice. So congratulations once again for being self-motivated to have a better life, to influence others in a positive way, to influence your entire environment, your entire world, the entire so on and so forth. Because it's yours. All right. So that's it for Letter to Horen. We'll begin the next one. What is the next one? Letter to the lay priest Ichinosawa, another lay monk. So a lot of instruction in this latest series of Gosho. Good for us. It's like Nichiren's alliterating how to practice Buddhism correctly, directly to each of and every one of us. How amazing. All right, so I look forward to this opportunity and the next video on this next Go Show. In the meantime, thank you. Thank you so much for participating. Thank you for your support. And I will see you next time. Namu Myoho Renge Kyo.